Hello, everybody. It's George from Ireland. So here I am with In My Own Time by Jeremy Thorpe. God, I should have held this up at the beginning, get it into the thumbnails. So his autobiography, and there is the man himself. And I'm reviewing it only 24 years after it came out. So that's it. The blurb, the dust jacket blurb. Here it is. One of the most charismatic politicians of the age, Jeremy Thorpe recalls important events and episodes in his life and fascinating collection of anecdotes and reminiscences. Well, I shan't read it all, but it's got forwards from various people like Sir Clement Floyd, the late Clement Floyd, grandfather of Sigmund, the one who was out-grandfather by Churchill's grandson in China. Clement Floyd is himself a former Liberal MP, posthumously disgraced by allegations of a sexual abuse of a prepubescent girl. Lord Avebury, another Liberal, and so on. Not everybody, Sir Cyril Smith. The late Lord Briggs, I went to a talk by him. So mostly Liberals. But anyway, there is the man himself. But unusually for an autobiography, it's got a thematic rather than a chronological approach. Now, which is fascinating and enthralling, and it doesn't dwell on anything for too long. It's got pace, because it can be too involved, too self-justificatory. It's not an apologia. But there's a certain loss of coherence for the fact that it doesn't have this linear narrative. It's eschewed the chronological approach, which is customary, but you know, he was always very much his own man, Jeremy Thorpe. But it's a small price to pay, this loss of coherence, for making it so much more readable. To HJL, now, I don't know who HJL is. In Memoriam, that's the dedication. His first life was Caroline Allpass. I thought it might have been dedicated to her, but no, she died in a car crash relatively young. In 1970, about 35, right after the June 1970 election, the ruler had a son, Rupert. One of the salient facts about Jeremy Thorpe is that he was a homosexualist and a practicing one at that. He'd got into that as a schoolboy at Eton. Now, a lot of boys dabbled in that, but grew out of it as soon as they left school, but not him. He was primarily homosexual. But when he became leader of the Liberal Party, it was decided that he must take unto himself a wife. So he cast around for a good wife. There was Caroline Allpass, had already passed the age of 30. It's a very unusual name. I only met one other person with the surname Allpass, but she didn't spell it quite the same. In Thorpe's biography by the redoubtable Michael Block, he said that Caroline Allpass was a queer's mole, a bit like we say a fag hag these days. A very tall lady, but actually strikingly good looking. But he married her. She was a virgin on her wedding day, it's thought, which was common for the time. And he apparently had done it with a woman beforehand. But, you know, this is prior to 1967, and homosexual acts were still a crime of all ages. And then it was decriminalised only for those over 21, only two of them at the time, no threesomes, and in private, they couldn't be watched by people and so on. But nevertheless, he tried to be heterosexual, at least bi, and succeeded and actually quite liked it. Although from the time he met Caroline Allpass, so far as I'm aware, he never had intimate relations with a male, but he certainly had done his youth, which is to be his undoing. Remember, when he was elected to Parliament in 1959, at the age of 30, for Devon North, it was still very much a crime. So it's got photos and reminiscences, recollections of his grandparents, Jack Norton Griffiths, whom he never met, Sir John Norton Griffiths, Empire Jack, as he was known, who was briefly a Conservative and Unionist MP, who was an engineer, who made a fortune around the world in Ploiești, Romania, blowing up oil wells in the First World War to prevent them falling into German hands, in Angola as well. But eventually had a disastrous project in the 1920s, was it? Construction project, and committed suicide because of that. There was a bit of suicide as well in the family. Apart from that, Thorpe's sister committed suicide. There's his father, who was briefly a Conservative MP as well, J.H. Thorpe, King's Counsel, who decided to give up Parliament to practice at the bar, but died in 1944 when Jeremy Thorpe was just 15. Because, of course, there are the parents on the wedding day. It's not that eloquent, this book. I mean, it's engaging, it's reasonably fast moving. It could be read aloud. It's almost oral literature. So it sparkles from the page, but in a way it's unimpressive for someone of such articulacy. But I suppose it's better known for oracy than writing. There's his redoubtable mother with her trademark monocle. She only wore glasses in the sea and he had one bad eye. Almost unique for a woman to wear a monocle, just like Thorpe wore his hat, his what sort of hat was it? A Homburg hat. But he said that's because his uncle by marriage generously undertook to pay his school fees to provide him with a financial subvention at university, and of course when he was reading from the bar. Remember in those days you didn't get a penny when you were a pupil at the bar. And in return his uncle had some sort of hat factory, said wear a hat to advertise him. So he did, and he was a walking advertisement of the declining millinery industry for the rest of his life. And Thorpe mentioned one of his grandfathers who came from Cork, who was a Church of Ireland clergyman, whom Thorpe seems to have been a bigot. And it was later speculated by Bob Block, this possibly it was explicative of Thorpe's lack of sympathy for Ulster Unionism, which he associated with Protestantism. Of course, Thorpe was a nominal member of the Church of England, and he loved kowtowing to the establishment. That's why he got married in the Archbishop of Canterbury's private chapel at Lambeth Palace and so on. Had the Archbishop present. There's a cartoon about him marrying Caroline Allpass as a Conservative, and Edward Heath, the Conservative leader, is supposedly playing the organ. Grocer Heath could indeed play the organ. He used to like to conduct orchestras. So there he is, marital bliss with Caroline. You can see she's a handsome female. And there he is fishing off some pier. So his name from his most extraordinary ebullience, Michael Ramsay, sometime Archbishop of Canterbury, whom he befriended, who attended his wedding reception and so on. Of course, then he married Marion, the Countess of Harewood. She was married to the Queen's cousin. She'd been a teenage Jewish Viennese refugee in the 1930s. There are some of his musical acquaintances in Red Square, Moscow, because his second wife, Marion, she's a good friend of the composer Benjamin Britten. And Benjamin Britten lived in a long-term gay relationship with Peter Pears. But Marion Thorpe didn't want to hear about homosexuality. That's how closeted things were, because when Thorpe happened to raise a topic in a general way, far from fessing up they'd been actively gay for years, she made it plain she never wanted to hear about this topic ever again. But she wasn't completely naive. Surely she was aware that her friend Benjamin Britten and Peter Pears were more than just good friends who'd lived together for decades. Okay, and then Yehudi Menuhin, the famed violinist, was a friend of theirs because she was very musical, Marion, Countess of Harewood. She had three sons with a husband. Then they got divorced because of his infidelity. So he was a gifted pianist, Jeremy Thorpe. He'd even considered becoming a professional violinist, not pianist, violinist. He was into collecting Chinese objets d'art, chinoiserie, one should say. Talked about when he was a schoolboy at Eton, cycling over to Dornywood to visit a peer of the realm with his friend Simon Barrington Ward, who was later Bishop of Coventry, because Dorney Wood is just about 4 miles north of Eton, just north of Slough, quite close to the Thames, because of course there's Dorney Reach. And Dorney Wood was subsequently gifted by Lord Courtauld Thompson to the nation, and that's the country residence of the Chancellor Exchequer. Is the Courtauld Institute named in his honour? I don't know. So he's called to the bar. He practiced desultorily at the criminal bar and so on. Then he supplemented his meagre income by interviewing for independent television, ITV, which had just been launched. It was highly contentious whether they would just produce gutter television for the sake of advertising revenue. He went all around the world to interview King Hussein of Jordan and then saw him pardon two men who tried to assassinate him or something, interviewing the Shah of Iran, they're in Iran and things like that. It was all over Africa. So Thorpe, he recalls how well he knew the former Prime Minister, David Lloyd George, who he called his taid, as in the Welsh word for grandfather, because he, remember, Thorpe only knew one of his grandfathers. The others had died before Jeremy Thorpe was born. And there is Jeremy Thorpe's father and someone else, is it Gwilym Lloyd George, David Lloyd George's sons. Suppose he dressed up as the Emperor and Empress of Ethiopia. Gwilym Lloyd George, later a National Liberal MP, effectively Conservative, Home Secretary, the one who ordered the last woman in Britain to be hanged to actually go to the gallows, Ruth Ellis, and was spoken about as a possible future prime minister. But that didn't happen. Now, this is considered to be all very non-PC these days, sort of blackface. But Abyssinia, we now call it Ethiopia, at the time of the Italian invasion, and they're becoming anti-appeasement, but not wanting to spend much on war, and obviously wanting to team up with another genocidal totalitarian regime, which by 1936 had murdered far, far more people than the Third Reich had, the Soviet Union. Okay, that was it. And so then when a memorial to David Lloyd George was unveiled in Parliament, they had Jeremy Thorpe deliver the tribute to him, John Jeremy Thorpe, to give him his proper name, but he went by his middle name, Jeremy. So he had cordial relations with the Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, a Labour man who'd been a former member of the Liberals himself as an undergraduate, but very testy relationship with a rather bland, inhuman Edward Heath, who was square-faced and square in every other sense as well. And then here's Thorpe's tribute to two women as a crashing snob, both the daughters of former prime ministers, Violet Bonham Carter, the daughter of Henry Herbert Asquith, and then Megan Lloyd George, the daughter of David Lloyd George. She then became a Labour MP, having briefly been a Liberal MP, realising there was no future really there. So he used to go on his summer holidays and stay with the Lloyd Georges in Wales through his childhood. He was evacuated to the United States in 1940. Jeremy Thorpe, he stayed with his aunt by marriage there in Connecticut, went to school there for 3 years, took summer holidays on a lake in New Hampshire, was Winnipesaukee. He very much supported Franklin Delano Roosevelt's Democratic Party and against Wendell Willkie's Republicans. So he knew Isaac Foote as well, with the distinguished Foote family. Sir Dingle Foote was a Liberal MP for somewhere in Cornwall, I think. Viscount Samuel, Lord Beveridge, who was himself briefly a Liberal MP, Master of University College, Oxford, my old college, knew Nye Bevan, the first health secretary, the time of the National Health Service being founded, who was a very formidable Labour MP on the far left, part of the Keep Left group, said that he considered the Tories lower than vermin. Herbert Morrison, the sometime Deputy Prime Minister, Labour man, grandfather of Peter Mandelson, but don't hold that against Herbert Morrison. He got along well with Wilson. And there are pen portraits of Pierre Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, Golda Meir, the Prime Minister of Israel. And all this is very impressive. Consider the Liberal Party, you know, was hovering in somewhere between existence and non-existence. Each election was a near-death experience for the Liberal Party under him. Remember, they only had six MPs at one stage. They could all fit in a mini or meet in a phone box. But then they had Cyril Smith, who was grossly obese, the MP for Rochdale, who probably needed his own mini to fit in. And so on. He explains his conversion to the Liberal causes, how he cut a seat at the Oxford Union, how he was present at the Oxford Union, very distinguished, probably all of them dead now there in that photo. Robin Day, who was in the Liberal Party but later became a BBC interviewer, was a barrister too, and so on. And the famous 1975 debate before the vote, the referendum on staying in the European Economic Community, where he put the case alongside Edward Heath, the Conservative leader, former Prime Minister, against Barbara Castle and Peter Shaw, both Labour MPs. And he brought it down, and much about his North Devon constituency and so on, how his mother and grandmother, stalwart Conservatives, came over to the Liberal side to support him. They certainly believed in him. And he denies ever having had a sexual relationship with Norman Joseph, who later went by the name Norman Scott. And the alleged conspiracy to murder Norman Joseph, he does briefly talk about his trial and maintains his innocence throughout. No surprise there then. And was he going to go into government? He could have been foreign secretary, prop up the Conservatives after the indecisive February 1974 result. It is scintillating, and I would greatly recommend this to you. So it's an unconventional autobiography. He quotes his own speechless a bit. He doesn't bore us with data too much. He does have a bit of data. He doesn't really reflect on his poor decision-making. But by 1979, he's voted out of Parliament, and he wasn't going to come back. He was lively. As he said, he enjoyed politics like his grandfathers before him. That's true. And like Union Jack, his grandfather, or Empire Jack, rather, he believed in causes well outside the United Kingdom. He believed in racial equality in the Commonwealth, Thorpe, whereas his grandfather wanted to maintain the empire as it was beforehand. So he was very much the cause of Zimbabwe, Jeremy Thorpe, as in ending minority rule in what was then known as Rhodesia. But he managed to get world leaders to meet him when really he was a nobody. He didn't get a sniff of power, but he did get the Liberals to have over 20% of the vote in 1974, their best result for almost 50 years. So that's him. He had friends all around the world. So Jeremy Thorpe, but then he was briefly Secretary General, whatever it was, of Amnesty International with the United Kingdom of the early 80s. But there were about a month, there was sackfuls of wrathful mail. So he had to resign from that position, and he was just retired. And then he was stricken by Parkinson's. He was someone who should have taken to the stage. There was always an actor in him, really. He was an ardent Europhile right from the get-go, arguing that the United Kingdom ought to accede to the European Economic Community, or the Common Market, as it's usually known back then. And he was there at the signing of the Treaty of Rome. He wasn't a signer himself. He's part of this Keep Britain in Europe. Maggie Thatcher was in it too. Many Conservatives were in it too. Okay, so that's all about this. And it is fascinating. I got it yesterday and I've read almost the whole book already. So, and then he spent most of his time in North Devon, at a lovely house in London as well. Got through his wife's divorce, his second wife. Look, a memorial to his first wife, Caroline Allpass. I would like to go and see it. I was actually brought, I was in China when he died, and he had his memorial service, a funeral at St. Margaret's Church, Westminster. I would like to go and see his grave down somewhere in southwest England, probably his Devon North constituency. There he is with his son, Rupert, a famed photographer who took those photos in Hello magazine, published in 2002, of the wedding of, who are they? That one from the Darling Buns of May, Catherine Zeta-Jones, the Welsh actress. And who's that old American actor? I forgot his name. So here he is with his son at Chuggerton, their house in the North Devon constituency. He was cruelly stricken by Parkinson's and deprived of his ability to do faces. Apparently, he's a very gifted person when it came to mimicry and so on. Right. Thank you so much for watching. Please make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal. Bye.